calling the Senate Education Committee to order at 8:04 a.m. on April 12th. And this morning we have President Senator Coghill and Senator Begich and myself, Chair Hughes. And please remember your cell phone etiquette. Thanks to those assisting us. We have a busy morning this morning. And I want to welcome and recognize we have Senator Gardner, we have Representative Klayman, Representative Westlake in our audience too. Just want to acknowledge them. So today we will have hearings on four pieces of legislation. SCR 5, Alaska Reads Day, which will be taking public testimony. And it, if it's the will of the committee, we'll pass this one out today. And we'll also be holding our first hearing on HB 86, the Student Loan Default and Occupational License Renewal by Representative Klayman. And we will also hear HB 135, the School Construction Grant Program by Representative Westlake. And finally, we will hear HB 64 and be taking public testimony on this bill as well. And with this, I'd like to open public testimony on SCR 5. And it looks like we have Posey Boggs with the Alaska Reading Coalition online. Posey, if you would state your name for the record and your affiliation, proceed with your testimony on SCR 5 Alaska Reads Day.
Thank you, Minister Hughes. This is Posey Boggs, and I'm part of the Alaska Reading Coalition. And we want to thank Senator Gardner for bringing forward the Alaska Reads Day resolution. The actions that this resolution would encourage and inspiring can be empowering because it can bring organizations that make reading well for Alaska children. They make it their focus, and we can come together on one day to celebrate readers, to inform and celebrate those who struggle with reading and their teachers, and we can help give identification about what works and what early identification of those struggles may be. We also would love to share technology that not only accommodates reading, but can instruct early reading sub-skills and help parents provide such early reading skills in their homes. Alaska Reads Day could provide an avenue to rally around the importance of Alaska students being instructed well in early reading and early literacy. We perceive that the Alaska Reads Day can propel forward the Department of Education's early literacy goals and supporting teachers of reading at all levels from preschool on up and their students. While early literacy skills can begin in the home, parents and preschool teachers need the support of expert information, and we believe if they are armed with solid early reading and literacy information, we can reduce the number, the 70% of the state's fourth graders who are not reading proficient. The need for teachers and parents to embrace and understand the importance of early literacy and reading and that there are best practices, we believe, is huge. And Alaska Reads Day can help parents and teachers and communities grow in this understanding. And such a day can harness our resolve as a state and our commitment to creating a fully literate state that starts with solid early literacy information and understanding and commitment. And I'm available for questions if needed.
Thank you, Posey. And I wasn't present for the first hearing on this bill, so this was probably mentioned. But do you know why March 2nd was chosen?
I actually have no idea.
Okay. Well, for selfish reasons, I wish it were in the fall so that we as legislators were home in our district and could go into the schools and promote it. But Senator Begich, do you have a question?
I was just going to say it's Dr. Seuss's birthday.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. It's hard to beat that one out. Senator Begich, did you have a question? Well, thank you very much, Posey, for your testimony. We appreciate hearing from you this morning. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on SCR 4? Seeing none, we'll close testimony. And is there any further discussion?
What is the will of the committee? Senator Coghill.
Madam Chair, I move that we move the Senate concurrent resolution number 5 from committee with individual recommendations, and I think there's a zero fiscal note.
Thank you very much. And seeing no objections, SCR 5 is passed out of the Senate Education Committee, and we'll take a brief at ease to sign the document. We're back on the record, and we are now ready to hear HB 86, Student Loan Default and Occupational License Renewal, by Representative Klayman, who's joined us at the table with his staff. So if you'd like to present your bill, we're eager to hear it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee, and for the record, my name is Matt Klayman. I'm the state representative from House District 21 in West Anchorage, and I want to thank you all for hearing House Bill 86. Thomas Jefferson said that government is best which governs least, and our goal in bringing forward House Bill 86 is to revoke the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education's authority to use non-renewal of occupational licensing as an incentive to ensure payment of student loans in the instance of default. As the consequences of defaulting are already severe and the Commission has not exercised this authority since 2010, it makes sense to repeal these statutes. And I will now turn it over to my staff member, Owen Phillips, to tell you a little more about the bill.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Owen Phillips. I'm staff to Representative Klayman, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. House Bill 86 repeals current statutes that allow the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, ACPE, to threaten non-renewal of occupational licenses for individuals who have defaulted on their student loans. Repealing this authority will allow licensed individuals to continue their work in order to earn an income and pay back their loans without fear of losing their licenses. There are already many difficulties that one faces if they default on their student loans, not limited to late fees, court costs, liens on property, and adverse reports to consumer reporting agencies. Current statutes state that the Commission has the authority to provide notice to a licensing authority for non-renewal of licenses. If the Commission posts such notice, the licensing entity may not renew said license during the next renewal cycle. Many of these laws were passed in the 1990s and early 2000s when student aid was often provided by states. Now, however, most loans are federal. Last year, Montana became the first state to repeal similar statutes, and now only 21 states remain. This bill allows us to follow Montana's example and reduce that number to 20 states and protect our licensed nurses, pharmacists, social workers, teachers, correctional officers, and many others. I'll now provide a brief sectional of the bill. Section 1 deletes language that is no longer necessary after the repeals mentioned in Section 2. Section 2 repeals Alaska Statute 14.43.145A4, which gives the authority to the Commission to provide notice of a default to a licensing entity for non-renewal of a license. Also repeals Alaska Statute 14.43.148, which indicates that a licensing entity may not renew a license if they have received such notice from the Commission that the license has licensee has defaulted on a loan issued by the Commission. And lastly, Alaska Statute 21.27.390D, which makes reference to temporary licenses. Before I conclude, I'll mention for the record that Janie Hovenden, the director of the Division of Corporation, Businesses, and Professional Licensing, and Ms. Stephanie Butler, the executive director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education and executive officer of the Alaska Student Loan Corporation, are in the room and available for questions if we need to. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in House Bill 86, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Begich.
To either Representative Klayman or the staff. How often was it used, if at all?
Through the chair, Senator Begich. Prior to 2010, it was used 155 times, and to date, there are 46 outstanding cases of loans that were never paid back.
I have a question. Did you have one, no, Senator Coghill? Under current statute, is there a way for a student that defaults to not lose their license, or is it automatic? Is it up to the discretion of ACPE, or how does it work?
Owen Phillips, staffer, Representative Klayman, Ms. Chair, as per my understanding, it's only if the commission decides to go forward and contact the licensing agency. So it's under their discretion, as I understand it. But Ms. Butler, I'm sure, would be able to confirm that assertion.
Okay. How many students currently are receiving, and how many dollars are we talking about that we've got out there that...
Ms. Chair, there are currently, this is a response to Representative Birch asked a similar question, so this is coming straight from ACPE. There are currently 17,400 borrowers in the state loan portfolio, and that comprises about $240 million.
Okay. And is there anything else in statute where the person gets penalized for defaulting on their loan? Is there any other thing that repercussions that they bear as a result, or was this the only stick, you might say?
Ms. Chair, as per the same question, they found that garnishing wages has worked quite well in contrast to the loan default equaling non-renewal of license, because then the individuals are still allowed to make some kind of income, and then they just garnish a portion of those wages.
Oh, thank you. So, and is that something that is always done, is automatically done, or how does that work? How is that decision made whether to garnish wages if someone's defaulted?
Ms. Chair, I'd like to default to Ms. Butler.
Okay. Are there other questions? Senator Coghill.
First of all, I like the approach because of what Owen just said, and that is the ability to work and to pay off is something that it was probably thought that we were penalizing them by giving them a loan. We actually were actually extending licenses, so that was probably thought that was a hammer, but it actually, I think, was counterproductive. But on the repealers, Owen, you said that the 21.27.390 was temporary license. Just give me a little better sense of that, because what we're doing is saying it has no longer the effect on this temporary license. I just wondered what that license was. I'll look it up. I just thought maybe you knew it right off the top of your head.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Coghill, I would also have to do a little bit more investigation as to what. I just know that it says it was a short blurb about temporary licenses also fall under this purview.
Looks like the senator who was hunting.
Wonderful.
And just to,
Representative Klayman.
Just to mind, it's one of the features they discovered, as I understand it, with the revoking licenses as a sort of trying to use that as a stick method to collect it, it tended to cause people that had an occupational license here in Alaska to leave Alaska with their license and then get a license in another state, because there was like, well, if they want to take my license away, then they'd go to California or Montana mm-hmm. or wherever else. And then they'd be there working, and we lose our jurisdiction ability to garnish wages. And so what was happening was we were actually having a harder time collecting because we'd use this hammer, people would leave, and then we'd lose our jurisdiction ability to actually use other methods to collect. And so it was actually a kind of doubly ineffective collection technique that the other collection techniques, including wage garnishment and potential impact on your credit report, were far more effective in getting the collections than trying to tell somebody, well, you can't work as a nurse anymore, you'll have to find another job. Then not only are you potentially pushing them into a lower wage earning capacity, that you're taking away something they may be struggling to meet their student loan, but maybe we'd rather have them working as a nurse than or a, other pharmacist or something else than another job that may actually earn less and have them less positive about what they're doing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Did you want to follow up with?
No, I think so. That was thanks to Senator Bagister that it was a variety of different temporary licenses that, and I think the point was made by the sponsor.
And I appreciate, too, you know, you're mentioning nurse because we're pretty hyper-focused on education, and I was thinking ACP, I'm thinking of teachers, and this actually is all the occupational licenses, and as Janie's here, that's a reminder as well. This has impact across our economy. So if there are any further questions, I would like to invite Stephanie Butler up if she could address some of the questions that came earlier and just provide how it works right now with garnishing wages and your if the administration has a position on this bill also.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Stephanie Butler, Executive Director, Commission on Post-Secondary Education and Executive Officer, Alaska Student Loan Corporation. Very briefly, the history here is in the late 80s and 1990s when the Commission didn't have the ability to compel repayment from people who were defaulting on their loans and clearly had income and ability to repay. The Commission eventually found itself in a situation where the loan program as a whole was at a risk. In response to that, the legislature gave the Commission a number of authorities to compel repayment from folks who appeared to have income and ability to repay. Some of those were more effective than others. The most effective ones are the ones that involve garnishment. There are actually more effective in terms of the Commission's ability to collect and in terms of the borrower's ability to reduce the amount that they owe, which is something that's important to us, that the levers that we use are actually assisting the borrower in reducing the debt that they owe. We began using the authority to put holds on occupational licenses, and we found it was expensive. It was challenging for borrowers to understand. It was challenging for the issuers of occupational licenses in the state, various agencies to work on, very manual and not particularly effective. The statute did allow us to put a hold on a renewal, at which point a 150-day temporary license could be awarded to the applicant, during which time the idea was that the applicant would negotiate with us and get into a repayment schedule, but we found that was not the case. We currently have 40-odd holds still pending. Reviewing them, it appears that none of those people are in Alaska at this time. So should this legislation pass, we would simply release those holds.
Okay. Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Butler?
Senator Begich. Madam Chair, thank you. Just an observation. I remember I hate to be the senior guy on the table. I was working at the time in the legislature when Representative and then Senator Porchot was pushing a lot of that what was really a scattershot approach to try to salvage the student loan organization. I remember that distinctly. And there were a lot of things that were done and with the hope that something would stick. Clearly, this did not.
And Stephanie, does I think it's a good bill, and I think it's needed, and I think Representative Klayman's point probably, he really made the most important observation, is that when people leave the state, we lose the jurisdiction to garnish wages. Which sounds like it's happening with those that are remaining. But I just was curious, if this bill were not to pass and someone defaults and they haven't left the state, is it automatic that is it up to your discretion how you proceed with the different authorities that were given to ACPE?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The wage garnishment is an automated process. One of our very high concerns is that we treat everybody in the same situation the same way. A borrower defaults when they haven't made a payment in 6 months or they haven't made an arrangement with us for a deferment, assuming they qualify, they're unemployed, or they have some other qualifying reason not to make payments. At 180 days, they're notified that they've that they have defaulted on their loans. They receive notifications every 30 days up until that period, both by telephone and by written notice. They have 30 days to appeal that default, after which, if they are in Alaska, we do commence with wage garnishment. At that point, their option, if they want to be relieved from wage garnishment, would be to demonstrate financial hardship.
And for those that have moved out of state, would this default show up on their credit score? And it would be reflected in their credit score, even though you can't garnish their wages? Are they suffering some consequence?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, we do credit report our borrowers, both so that the borrowers who are making progress on their repayment show their credit reports reflect that positive history, and so as a lever for those borrowers who are not attempting to make payments.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions? All right. Does anyone want to bring up Ms. Is it Coverton? Is that Hovington? Do we have any questions? Well, you get off the hook there. So, well, this we appreciate this. Representative Klayman, do you have any other comments you'd like to make, or Owen? Okay. Well, we appreciate this, and we will open up public testimony at this time. I'm not seeing anyone online. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on HB 64? No, I've got the wrong number here. It is 86. Seeing none, we'll close public testimony, and we will set this bill aside, and it may come up again on Friday. I expect that it may. So with that, we are ready to move on to HB 135, and I'd invite Representative Westlake to come forward to the table and his staff.
Thank you.
Liz, please sit down.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Dean Westlake, House District 40 Representative. Along with is my aide is Elizabeth Rexford. Thank you for hearing House Bill 135 this morning. Now, House Bill 135 aims to do two things. It's increased the original time limit to identify and secure matching funds from the current three-year window that we have to put a floor of 5 years on it. And then the bill will also allow the Commissioner of the Department of Education to grant time extensions for an additional 3 years if just cause is shown. It extends a time period for school districts to raise their percentage of shares for project costs appropriated through the Educational Facilities Maintenance and Construction Fund for appropriations made under AS 37.05.560. Currently, school districts are required to raise a percentage share match of the total cost projects within 3 years for the appropriated approval. However, since the adoption of the three-year time constraint in 1993, multiple projects have required more time to raise their required percentage share. According to the Department of Education and Early Development, the three-year time lapse, while appropriate for most projects, exceptions do exist. Some projects can utilize a time extension when faced with extenuating circumstances outside of the school district's control. Previous and current examples include, but they're not limited to, projects within our district and the Northwest Arctic Borough, the Kenai Peninsula Borough, Yupik School District, Yukon Flats School District, and the Huna School District. When the legislature makes appropriations for this program, it is the intent to see the projects through to completion. This bill allows fluidity to account for real-world hurdles that can slow projects down or prevent them from happening. So I'm asking for your support as we do this. We worked on this on the House. There were some great amendments to put some sideboards, which happened on this from the minority side, and it passed the House unanimously.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Westlake. Elizabeth, did you have anything that you wanted to add, or you want to explain the mechanics of the bill? You're there for moral support. All right. So do we have questions from committee members? Senator Coghill?
Yes. Thank you, Dean. So
So in the first section there, except for in D and G, so we have G in the bill. Explain the D of this.
The D?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a subsection D that doesn't show up actually in the bill, so.
Let me find that over here. And
so I see the five, and so the senator who sits closest to the blue books is probably also.
And I'm looking for it now, Senator. Okay, except as provided in D or G of the section.
Right, and G is in the bill, which does the explanation, it looks like. And D is not. So G is explained in Section 2. And so I was just wondering, and my apologies for not actually getting this and reading it before I got to committee. So.
Oh, this is a great learning curve. I'm enjoying this, believe me. And I'll have my staff, my chief of staff, Jesse.
For the record, Jesse Logan, staff to Dean Westlake. I apologize, Senator. Thank you for the question. To the chair, I don't actually have Section D here. This is a particular section that is already existing in statute, and what they're adding here is actually the G, which is the new subsection. So I don't have D here in the bill with me. I apologize if I can get a copy of the blue books.
Senator,
I can speak to it.
Senator Begich.
Well, thank you. And it, even though it's provided in statute, it's now going to be an exception. So Senator Begich, maybe you could.
Senator Begich, if you could tell us what that exception in D would be.
So the original language ended at the period. Thank you, Madam Chair. The original section A ends in after the B and C here, and then they're adding the new word. The section D is if a district with full value per ADM of $200,000 or less can demonstrate in writing that it's unable to provide the required participating share. In other words, for the smallest districts, the law already allows them this exception, mm-hmm. and they're placing that exception into – they're just referencing the existing exception that exists now. Okay. So all it's doing is referencing the existing section by putting D in there. Otherwise, you'd have two contradictory exceptions in here. And then it adds G, which is the new section down below, section two. But so it's like a cleanup piece, because the section D now simply says that if you have an ADM of $200,000 or less, I don't know if there are any districts that actually have an ADM of $200,000 or less. I'm pretty sure there aren't any. Maybe Pelican might be that one, but I think that was
okay. So it's just adding. I get it. So you don't have exceptions rubbing up against each other.
Exactly.
Got it.
That's what it looks like.
Thank you for that, Representative Westlake.
And thank you. And because we are doing the cleanup, what the amendment did that, or what happened is we've changed it from a 3-year floor to a 5-year floor, and the exception is the commissioner being able to extend for a 3-year period if there's just cause.
Representative Westlake, you mentioned in your opening remarks that there have been a few times where the extension has been needed, and that is granted then by the commissioner, so he or she can make 1 3-year exception and then that's it, or how has it worked in the past?
Yes, I believe so. I'll defer that to Jesse.
Again, for the record, my name is Jesse Logan, staff to Dean Westlake. Madam Chair, there has not really been an exception piece before. There has been one case I know of, which was the Huna Major Maintenance Project, which happened back in 2011, where there was a small exception made, but not in a time frame. But they reduced the matching share to $35,000, or by $35,000, when they were unable to secure their match within the time frame allowed. They secured their match, but it took a few more months for the bank to actually release the funds, and therefore the commissioner made an executive decision to reduce that match and able to clean it up on the back ends.
Okay, thank you. What districts right now is this really important to? Is there something pending that
– and I'm sorry, and Representative Westlake, and to the chair, is yeah, we're at the 3 years. We get rid of that and go to the 5 year. We're okay, and everything comes through. The circumstance beyond our control is, of course, the road that goes to the school. So.
You're talking, yeah. Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Coghill.
You're talking about up in the Arctic, Northwest Arctic?
Yes, I am.
Madam Chair, that would be the Kivalina School. Mm-hmm. The other school right now that's pinning up against this deadline is the Ketchmack Salo project down in Kenai Borough.
Okay. Are you aware that that there might be in a year or two other schools that will be hitting this 3 year problem as well, or are there any in the pipeline?
As I was shopping this bill, if you will, over on our side, on the House side, I know there were some concerns by other representatives as well. So I think there may be some, and hopefully you've got some people with testimony that can answer that better than I do here in a little bit.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any more questions for the sponsor of the bill?
Maybe a clarifying.
Senator Begich?
Madam Chair, I'm aware that you mentioned the Ketchmack Salo School. I think there were two other school construction projects in the last year that would potentially be affected by this. One of them would be in the Lower Kuskokwim School District, and one of them would be in the Yukon Koyukuk School District, the Huntington School, and I can't remember the name of the other one in LKSD. But those would be potentially districts that would be affected by this. Those are the only construction projects I'm aware of. Are you aware of any others?
I couldn't remember the representative from Interior Alaska that has a Denali, but he had expressed a concern as well, so there may be some.
They may have a school. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for your presentation. And at this time, we'll set this bill aside, and we're going to move on to HB 64. And I'm going to take a brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record, the Senate Education Committee, and we are now on HB 64, which was heard in a previous meeting, and we're going to open up public testimony on the bill. And online we have Lori Pickett. Lori, if you would like to identify yourself and your association, proceed with your testimony on HB 64, please.
Hello, this is Lori Pickett. I would like to start by saying thank you for taking your time during a very stressful session to address the serious problem of reading rates of our children. I'm speaking in support of HB 64 from several perspectives. A professional working in adult education for more than 20 years, a volunteer serving on the board of the International Dyslexia Association, Alaska Branch, a parent of two children who needed outside educational supports to learn to read, and a person living with dyslexia. I have spent countless hours researching and thinking on solutions to moving the needle on reading rates for not only Alaskans but nationally. What is most profound to me is the gap between what is scientifically known about how to teach reading and the instruction given to students in the majority of schools in Alaska and in the country. I believe that if we are to convene a task force on reading instruction, we can work to develop a sustainable plan to bridge that gap. Some children are natural readers, and some children need differing levels of direct instruction to master the complexities of reading. It's time to put to bed the myth that children cannot learn to read because of the environment parents provide, and start developing solutions to take what we know about teaching reading into the classroom. We have a chance to convene a task force to work toward a plan making reading accessible to more than 95% of the children we are charged with educating. Please, I encourage you to vote in support of HB 64. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Pickett? I have a question, and if you're not able to answer it, Ms. Pickett, it could be that our next testifier, Posey Boggs, may be able to. I was just wondering, how many children do we think in Alaska have dyslexia that are currently in K through 12?
That's difficult for me to give you a direct answer to, but my best guess is around, I would say, 12 to 20%. Posey can clarify that if she needs to.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next online is Posey Boggs with Alaska Reading Coalition. Posey, if you'd state your name and affiliation and proceed with your testimony, please.
Thank you. This is Posey Boggs with the Alaska Reading Coalition. And thank you, Senator Hughes, for scheduling this hearing and listening to our voices. I'd like to say that we really admired the testimony last Monday, April 10th, by the Alaska Council on School Administrators and all the testifiers. We listened carefully. We view the task force as a tool to extend their hard work beyond their own careers, to collaborate across stakeholders across the state and create a plan for reading outcomes that is sustainable, scalable, and systemic across Alaska, and based on the best scientifically evidenced information that is available now that has not been available to most of the field of education, as it happens outside, the research happens outside of the field of education. We also appreciate the bipartisan nature of the bill as evidenced by the sponsors of both the Senate and House version of the bill. We're very encouraged by the bipartisan nature, and we simply encourage the passage of HB 64 out of committee. And I'm available for any questions that you might have.
Yes, Posey, and the question about how many of our Alaskan students that you can estimate that might be dealing with dyslexia?
So what's quite interesting is I'm going to repeat the definition of dyslexia can be narrow and scientific, and those numbers are usually about 10%. When we add a little bit broader definition that a lot of researchers use, we are talking about 15 to 17%. Interesting and anecdotally, people have thought about Alaska being the last frontier and the kind of people who strike out to investigate and move to new frontiers actually tend to be are thinking out of the box, people with dyslexia. So it has been theorized that perhaps people who came to Alaska early on were dyslexic people, and maybe we have a higher percentage. But that's just a thought.
Interesting. Thank you. Do you know how dyslexia impacts mathematics? Does it cause the same problem? Because this is really focused on reading, so I was just wondering about the impact on learning math for students.
Oh, Senator Hughes, I'm so glad you asked that question, because just this week, three out of my students who I work with privately all brought up math, and dyslexia so impacts the ability to simply read a word problem. If you cannot read, you cannot master word problems in math. Further, people with dyslexia and dyscalculia, which is a math disability, have a very difficult working memory. So a working memory and long-term memory for math facts can be very, very difficult. And we have solutions in education about how to instruct students with poor working memory and long-term memory for math facts. And truly, calculators are great, but what impedes going forward to fractions and algebra is this lack of fluency with math facts and being able to read word problems. So just this week, you know, I lived dyslexia's impact on math with my very own students.
And Posey, with the numbers themselves, not a word problem, just a pure problem with numbers, for a child that has dyslexia, is it flipping the numbers around as well? Or does that only apply to letters?
So, at another time, I would love to explain the thing with reversals of numbers and letters. And it actually has very little to do with dyslexia and math problems. And when we're talking just a pure numbers problem, the reversals usually don't impact our kids with dyslexia and dyscalculia. And boy, I would love to present why our brain has reversals and to share with you basically briefly, it is a survival instinct to be able to immediately recognize an object from any angle, from any perspective, and that's what a reversal is. And so that instinct to instantly recognize is not very helpful with reading nor with math.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your comments, Posey, and your knowledge, your expertise in dyslexia. I'm not sure, but does this bill have a broader scope than just dyslexia? I realize we have an enormous problem with dyslexia in the state, in the country. But this is a bill that really is titled much more broadly than dyslexia. It talks about reading across the board. So are we just focusing on dyslexia and dealing with the students who have that problem, or is it a broader-based issue than that?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, we absolutely view this as a much broader bill. And the reason we do that is because the science about reading has been clearly identified for typical learners, for any learner for reading. And it segues right into the discussion about dyslexia. But your English language learners, your typical learners, reading happens in the same way. And so we view the bill as a global bill that is about reading, and it can simultaneously address the needs of students with dyslexia.
And a follow-up, Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Could you tell us about modern schools of education, and particularly those in Alaska? Are we using this scientific information that's available? Are teachers coming out of our programs in Alaska with an understanding of this whole issue of dyslexia and helping students become better readers? Are there some errors in our educating teachers here?
Well, sir, I hate being critical. However, the National Council on Teacher Quality has addressed this very explicitly in early reading instruction. And just this last year, you may have noticed that the Fairbanks, University of Alaska Fairbanks program for educators received a 99 percentile rating, which means they are teaching and passing on to their pre-service candidates 99, in the 99th percentile of the basic knowledge base that teachers read. And if you compare that to the University of Alaska, the percentile they received was 9th percentile. Now, this happens all over our nation. The last time I looked at it, only about 19% of universities across our nation seriously instruct their pre-service teachers in the foundational knowledge of reading. In fact, one of my colleagues here in Alaska attended the University of Ohio for both her undergraduate and her graduate teaching degree. She related that the state of Ohio insisted that universities teach phonics. In both of her first degrees, the professor walks in, opens the first page of the dictionary and said, "This is phonics," closed it, and that was it. And that was it both in her undergraduate and graduate program. She is now enrolled in a master's program, again, in Ohio at Mount St. Joseph, that is the science of reading. And I've walked with her through many of the courses, and it absolutely has what the National Council on Teacher Quality is looking for. And her master's program now has all of the components that I would want that are based on science. So there is a huge disparity, and thus it is probably the most challenging issue that I would want the task force to address.
Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Boggs.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. We appreciate it. I want to mention, too, to members that the sponsor staff, Kristen, is here if anyone has any questions for the sponsor. Seeing none. All right. And I don't see anyone else online. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. We are working on a CS, and we don't have that with us, so we're going to set this bill aside, and if there are additional changes that members would like to bring forward, they certainly are free to do that. So our next scheduled meeting is on Friday, 8 a.m., where we have noticed bills previously heard and scheduled. And so I'll just note this will be my last meeting as Chair of Education, and I'll continue to have a seat at the table, but Senator Stevens will be chairing beginning on Friday. So with that, and seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn at 8:52.